All right. Welcome back. We enjoy watching how your energies shift and modulate as we work with you over the time of a workshop. It's lots of fun for us to watch it. We hope it's fun for you to feel the shifts, the lightness. And even though you may feel that you are just floating along or really don't know where you're going, don't worry about it. We'll help you get there. All right. Now, earlier we talked about resistances and we did the little clearing here and there, some major amounts of resistances out of your chakras. And now you've had some time to allow some of that to settle in, to allow your chakras to kind of realign and reorient themselves. And some of you are starting to fade in your favorite stash spot. It's starting to reduce energy in this chakra or that chakra. So we want to begin this section with just reminding you that your old habitual responses, when you just do whatever it is that you normally do during your day, you can forget your body. You can forget your energy field. It is a habit of having a certain kind of limitation or a certain kind of reduction of energy in your chakras over your day-to-day life. It's just a habit. You wake up in the morning and maybe you pump yourself up in the morning so you feel good, but maybe you don't get back to it during your day. You get busy and engaged in various things and your attention goes this way and that way and it starts to fade again. And those old blockages about out of habit start slipping back in. So we would suggest that periodically during your day to remind yourself to open the channel that we have with you opened up, that channel of your kundalini, that channel of light that goes up through your spinal column to the top of your head, and expand it out and just think about that. So let's just do a little bit real quickly. This is not a long meditation at all. It's just you to attune yourself, just to stay connected to the flow. Just so go with your attention now. Closing your eyes, just with your attention, go to your root chakra, go to your coccyx, your rectum. You've been sitting on it, right? Just go there. And just imagine that there's a little door there where the energy comes through. It's a portal. It's a transformative, shifting vibrationally from another dimension to this one, to the three-dimensional world. And just kind of, in your mind, gently expand it. You can see just from your rough perception how much energy is coming through. Notice in comparison how much energy is coming through to what was coming through at the end of the meditation where we opened it up earlier. So there's something that's not enabling it to function at full flow. Right? So just now check. Go to second chakra and check. Is that chakra a little bit duller? Is the energy a little bit more stale there? Check the third, the fourth. Just go up and just scan. Just a couple of seconds each one. And if it feels kind of closed, just kind of open. Just imagine the door open. When the channel was a little girl, there was a cuckoo clock in her hallway of the house, and on the hour a little door would open up and a little bird on a spring would pop out and go cuckoo, cuckoo, cuckoo. The number of cuckoos being the hour that it was. And then when it was done, it would snap back in and the doors would go shut again. What we want you to do is just, boom, open those doors. Let the energy come out. So just open up your chakras. If you're in doubt, just kind of open it up. But it's really good for you to perceive yourself. Most people have difficulty perceiving their own energy fields. Even some very notable medical intuitives who can read other people's energy fields with scathing accuracy can get like befuddled with their own. Oh yeah, you're in the midst of your own energy field. It's a little hard to get a distinction, but you can learn how to do it. And just to perceive what chakras are kind of low, which ones are pumping the most? Where do you put your juice, you know? Where do you close down? Just, you know, pay attention and open all the chakras all the way up to the seventh. That's it. Come on all the way up. All right, shouldn't take long. Just let yourself complete that now. And now put your attention back down to the root. Open it up some more, that portal. And as if there's a pressure, a water pressure, or a light pressure on the other side, as you open it up, more light comes up like a river, flowing like water, like a river. Feel it just kind of flow up, all the way up. Up, 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 all the way up to the top. There you go. Now, go back again and open it up a little more. Get a bigger, wider flow, maybe a foot in diameter, maybe 2 feet now. And let it just flow all the way up. There you go. If you feel some lightness or a little tingling on the top of your head, that's a very good sign. If you don't, it still can be good, but sometimes you can really feel the opening in your head and the crown. Now you're looking much better now, yeah? After a good lunch. Your body may go into habitual response. Some of you digest your food habitually. And sometimes it's not all that good a metabolism. One of the major resistances we did not even mention, because we talked about the resistances in the chakras, is your relationship with your physical body and with your material plane. It's just sometimes hard to keep connected right. And of course, if you don't have that connection and you don't feel a solid groundedness in physical materiality at the same time that you're experiencing spiritual uplift, then you do have a schism between the spiritual and the material. It's built indeed into your culture. It's been a tradition that if you really want to dedicate your life to spiritual study and practice, you'd have to go and make a commitment and live with a group of nuns or monks and in a monastery somewhere, separating yourself from the world, from commerce, right? Commerce was the other side of it. There's spirituality and then there's commerce. And the tradition has been in every culture of going away for vision quest or leaving to seek the guru or whatever it is, leaving the material plane behind. In India, there's a tradition that at certain stages of your life that you do certain things. There is the stage, of course, of child and growing up. And at your learning and education, then there's what is called the householder phase, where you get married, have children, and all that kind of thing. But retirement is also the time when you can be done with your worldly work, and you can go off to meditate in your cave or with your group, or you can achieve in the world. If you're a woman in India, that's when a lot of women become successful, because no longer they are bound by their female duty to nurture and support everyone else. Then they can do what they want to do. Sometimes it's sad to postpone it, but that's part of the tradition there. But they could also choose to go meditate, to go and experience spiritual. Now, what we are seeing here as part of personal evolution is that you want to have the spiritual and the material as one, which means there's a whole bunch of adjusting you got to do with your physical body, with your material plane reality, and with your relationship to commerce. If you're going to manifest, you need the consensus to work for you, to support you. That whole illusion, that whole playground needs to be supporting you, so that you can draw the resources that are available in the illusion to you to manifest in the forms that you should choose. But there is a break between the spiritual and the material. A break installed in your consensus culture, in your unconscious. And this break is found in your body, because that break is a judgment on material plane, a separation from the spiritual and the material. So how can you be spiritual and material at the same time if you live in a physical body, when the culture says they are not compatible? So if you go spiritual, very often you lose a certain connection with your physical body. Then there are those who focus on physical body, the athletes, sports figures, those who love yoga. They live around yoga. They love breathing. They love running. Anything having to do with the body. It feels so, so wonderful. They love sex. And, of course, according to consensus and the old institutions of religion, that's about as far as you can get from your spirituality. That's almost worse than commerce. Of course, in India, they found a way to weave them together. Kundalini yoga. I have an excuse. I'm doing yoga. We don't intend to make fun of it. It's actually a wonderful culture of the physical body and of the energetic body. But it's not necessarily appropriate everywhere in the world, nor at all times, nor for all ages or all circumstances. What you want to find personally in your own personal evolution is your own connection to a material plane, your own connection to your body. Any time that you split, as we saw earlier, when you split that part of you that is divine from that part of you that is physical, the physical body suffers. The physical body has pain. It becomes weak. It becomes tired. It then becomes a burden that you carry around. And you seek to escape the physical body. by taking all sorts of things that painkillers are one thing, or other kinds of painkillers, such as, you know, alcohol or certain kind of teacher plants and so on, to give yourself that loft, to get yourself connected to the bliss and of the divine. But sometimes you leave your body behind in the process. And your body is very vital and necessary. There's no way you're going to manifest your radiance, your visions. No way you're going to be really visible to make a difference, to reveal yourself to yourself as well as the world, if you don't bring along your body. The body is not just something that, a slab of lard that you haul around. Nor is it, on the other extreme, the great temple. The temple of your body. Yes, it needs to be respected and loved and cherished and taken care of. And before you can emerge, if you have a physical issue, a physical limitation, you do need to address that first. Or otherwise, what you are going to open yourself to, the visions and the dreams that you're going to open to, the new future you're going to open to, you will not be able to fulfill. Your body will be and remain a limitation to you. In the past, you many times hoped that you could just push through, get the slave driver in there, and make it through to some other side where you would either have enough money or have enough success or have enough happiness or fulfillment to where you could rest. But we would like to suggest that resting is an extremely important aspect of the light chaos. And if you don't get enough rest, if you don't have enough physical vitality and energy, you need to pay attention to it. It will be your dark chaos that needs to be resolved. Also, if your connection to your body is filled with limitation or pain or resentment or resistance, then it's going to be difficult for you to really stay connected to the whole physical plane in general. And you need to be connected for manifestation. You need to be connected. It's part of the greater integration, the greater union of yourself with your world that you're heading towards. It is the element of earth, the grounding cables you have to Mother Earth. Mother Earth is the giver of all things. All manifestation comes from Mother Earth. There is nothing that manifests that is not from the earth. Even stuff that falls in from space, it is only found by its attraction to and connection to and arrival upon earth. You have not reached the technological sophistication that you can go to other planets and retrieve this and that and so forth. Regardless of the movie Avatar, you can't really go over there and retrieve special minerals and this and that and the other for use on the planet. It's all here. It's all a gift of Mother Earth. You need to connect with Earth. When your feet are grounded in love, love with earth, love with physicality, appreciation of physicality, and even appreciation of commerce, you can connect with it and receive from it. It can be your partner. Your physical plane reality is your partner. Your body is your partner. Think of them as such. But you have judgments on your body. And you have judgments on commerce. You have judgments on your world. You have judgments about what other people do, what they're like, what their culture does. And these judgments create static and resistance between you and your world. Now, we're not saying, oh, you know, go out and talk about BP and say how they're so wonderful. We don't mean, you know, making a mockery of this. What we do mean, though, is to recognize that any pointing fingers and blaming and judging them as being evil or terrible and so on will just stick you. It'll just limit you. Yeah, they did something stupid. But, you know, when you have a child, you want to always to distinguish between the errant behavior of the child and the child itself. You don't want to say, you're bad. You want to say, look, what you did was bad. Don't do that. And you want to do that with your world as well, to recognize that there are all these people who, for one reason or another, are doing whatever they're doing because they think that's the best thing for them. That's going to make them happier, that's going to make them freer, that's going to make them, their life work better. Like, for example, in the oil well that is spilling in the Gulf, the guy who was in charge of the rig, in charge of closing the well off, he took a shortcut. He didn't do the whole process. He said, oh, don't worry about it. Just do it partially. It'll hold. Of course, it didn't. But why would he make a decision like that? It's not like he was bad or the company was manipulative. He did feel pressured. He felt pressured to perform. He felt, in a sense, inadequate. They were running late on this well. They had been given a certain amount of time. They were running late. He was in a hurry. He thought this would save him some time, which would make it a little bit more graceful when he finally shows up at the office and say, finally, we're done. He would rather do that than wait several more days and then say, we're done. And they're going to say, what took you so long? His fear of disapproval. His feelings of guilt motivated him. He thought he would get off easier if he did that. So he made that call. All the choices that people make, all the decisions they activate, come from the same type of internal place as all the choices and decisions you make. So recognize that unity, that similarity between you and all others, all the politicians, regardless of what country they're from, all the religions, all the societies. It's all based on the same thing. Every human being has the inner voices. And the majority of the human race doesn't feel powerful. Those inner voices are very rough, very harsh. Just think back in your own inner voices, your own self-talk. Think about how bad it used to be, right? Notice how much better it is, even though there's still probably some stuff here and there that really gets you down, or you can get into a spin about it. Remember when it was really, really heavy? Judgmental, dark, and you were doing the best you could to function despite this internal part of yourself that was beating yourself up and giving you a hard time. You know how much energy you lost there. Tremendous. Any inner conflict, you'll lose energy, like we discussed earlier with the creative block or the tiredness. So to relate to your body as your partner, to relate to your world as your partner, you must take off of it all judgment, because that's the key for you. And your inner voices take all the judgment of yourself off. You're not learning anything from that judgment. If you are learning something from that judgment, we would be absolutely shocked. And it takes a lot to shock us. We've seen about everything. It's all judgments. Judgments of what other people will think or other people will do or what you will feel about yourself or what you will, what embarrassment you may have or whatever it is. You've got stuff in there. And as you have dismantled your self-judgment and acknowledged more of your divine self, that inner talk becomes milder and less nasty, more compassionate. We did a whole workshop on healing your relationship with yourself so that you could have a compassionate approach to you, a loving approach to you, so you could approach yourself from a place of love instead of any kind of judgment or try to fix you or try to improve you. And then we also did a workshop called Healing Your Relationship with Your Body. Because if you're not judging yourself, you've probably judged your body. Some of you still do. Some of you look in the mirror and you go, oh, geez. Some of you pay tremendous attention to your flaws. You pose this way and that way just to see how bad it is. Or some of you don't want to pay any attention to it, want to avoid it, want to ignore it, and so you pose in your very best position. Oh, I look good. Yes. All right. All right. I can go out now and be seen. So if you have all that going on inside you, what do you have going on with your whole reality? What do you think about religion, medicine, government? What do you think about all those institutions, those philosophies, the educational system? Do you really want your child to go to public school? Generally not. You want something that's going to nurture your child. But that's because there's some things that your child won't get in public school. So you judge it. Oh, public schools suck. I don't want my child to go to that trap. Yes, indeed. Children go into school. They come out missing their creativity. Or at least 80% of it. They go in school healthy and fine. They come out nearsighted. Or stigmatism. Or scoliosis. So it's time to remove all those judgments at your world so that your world can be loving and supportive for you. If you judge somebody, even mentally judge them, what are they going to do? How are they going to respond to you? Do they want to be around you? No. You don't go around judging your friends. If you do, you don't see them very often, do you? Some people don't like other people. They find fault with everybody. So they tend to become hermits, solitary people. This is not out of choice, but it's out of judgment. It's self-judgment projected out to others. So we encourage you to remove all judgment from your body and all judgment from your world. And only then can you, with clear eyes, with clear perception, know how to respond to and relate to it. You know that if you need a favor from some hard-working person, that if you can identify with them, get in rapport with them, appreciate their hard work and their effort, very often they'll be happy to give you that favor. But if you go there and say, "Damn it, I want my favor, and you need to stay overtime for me," they're not going to like that very much at all. And they're going to say, "Well, the regulation is such that," and they'll trot out some kind of limitation. So removing judgment from your world is critical. Because until you do, you're not going to be able to feel safe in your world. If you remove judgment from your body, you will begin to feel safety in your body. Now, safety is not a natural phenomena for physical body, because frankly, the end will come at some point and your body will cease to exist. Your body will die. It may suffer on the way as well. So this essential feeling about the impending doom of your life puts pressure on you time-wise. It makes you want to hurry up. It makes you, it's fodder for your slave driver. But what it also does, it's cruel to you. Because you can never feel safe. What if something happens to your body, or even worse, what if something happens to your loved ones' bodies? You don't trust your body. What if you push and drive and try to achieve that and then your body collapses from the stress? Then you don't feel you can rely upon your body. You can't depend on your body. But you can feel safety in your body if you ground with love to Mother Earth. And you can begin to recognize that you came here to get into this physical body, and you're not going to die until you've completed what you came here to do. It's just not possible to leave early. It's not possible to die before your time. Doesn't happen. Let yourself look at that from a point of view of saying, okay, it's not like I'm going to run out in front of a train just to test this. But I can start to trust that my body will do what it needs to do, and I will get done what I need to get done, and I'll experience what I came to experience. You'll begin to trust the plan. Not the plan of your young adult, the slave driver's plan, right? No, the plan of you and your higher self, who set up a life after many lives so that you would be here at this particular space-time intersection for the Great Shift at a certain age and a certain gender. It's all correct. The program, the choice of your track, your path, is unfolding precisely, perfectly, and beautifully. As we said before, you are not behind, and you're not going to die too soon. So begin to trust. Just think about, what would it feel like if you trusted that all is well, and that all will be well. that you could expect and anticipate every day, that you'd feel good and you'd do what felt right for you, that you could discover more and more of who you are, that you could imagine and create and move the flow, the divine flow of energy through your passion into your actions, that you could love, touch, and heal, knowing that this material plane is a temporary phenomena created for your exploration. What if you could wake up every day and expect that your world, that your reality, is loving you, supporting you, and friendly and safe? So that if you happen to find yourself in a really bad area of town, quote unquote, it's where scary things happen, the lairs of petty drug dealers, violent crime, and all sorts of horrible things, that you can walk through it unscathed, that you can find the beautiful souls that do live there. You don't have to connect with the fear and the danger. If you seem for some reason to find yourself there, it is all part of a plan, all part of an exploration. And we'll say it this way. Everything that comes to you, everything, is a gentle, loving reminder from your reality. It's presenting you with something you need to look at, you need to know, and respond to. Every challenge that comes to you is an opportunity. And every opportunity that comes to you is a challenge. For you to be able to receive the messages, the information from your reality, and as a powerful reality creator light being, to make your choices from there. To respond in your power, in your freedom, in your love, and in your trust. What if you could expect this every day? If you can, what happens is that you line up the dimensions in such a way that magic, seventh dimension, and energies of all kinds, seventh dimension, moves through the chaos and the creativity, sixth dimension, through the will and the imagination, fifth dimension, through time, space, the fourth dimension, into third dimension to manifest something for you that's precise to you. You do this every day. What if you could expect it to be a joyous, wonderful experience rather than a drag of have-tos, musts, shoulds, oughts, duties, obligations, and the crack of the whip of the slave driver? What if you had enough love and value of yourself that you could allow your reality to love and value you because it's consistent with who you are? It's natural for you because you know this about you. What if all the unpleasant-looking challenges that come to you are just simply messages saying, listen, dear one, for you to be the radiant light being that you came to be, you need to amp up your power, your love, your freedom, your trust. And here's an issue where you have in the past given away your power, your freedom, your love, or your trust. Where you've turned away from the light, the divine light of you. What if you could respond to that in a beautifully empowered, loving, free, and trusting way. It would no longer be something you would take personally. There'd be no judgments involved anywhere. There'd be no inner talk and conflicts between the slave driver and your resistant rebel and who knows what else. It'd be clean, flowing. In essence, it'd be fun. It'd actually be easy a lot of times. You would be able to anticipate magic. You say, oh, some kind of really crazy challenge here. Okay, and here's where I've given my power away in the past. Okay, it's a message. Take your power. Get prepared to be powerful. Not, oh, you stupid idiot, here you are again. You still didn't get this lesson. You're going to have to learn it again. So you respond without judgment, without fear, without craziness, and say, okay, I'm going to take my power. I'm going to step forth as an empowered being in this case, in this situation, and I'm going to look for the magic. I'm going to anticipate there's magic there. A problem? Okay, I'm anticipating it's going to be resolved with magic somehow. I don't know exactly how. You know, when you get a grab bag, you know, at the raffle, you know, surprise me. I don't know how the magic's going to show up. Surprise me. Delight me. Generally, the way the magic shows up is by connecting with love to your reality, allowing your reality to love you, anticipating and expecting magic, expecting love, being unwilling to give up your freedom to be you, unwilling to compromise your principles and who you are. Where's the magic? Where's the magic? Trusting that this is something the reality has brought you, and nothing, no challenge that has come to you has ever been too much for you, regardless of what impressions you may have of it. If you're in judgment, you may make that call. Oh, this is too big. I can't deal with this. This is too big a deal, too big a job. But you're taking it personally. You're judging it. You're not expecting magic. You're seeing your reality as an antagonist. What if you always saw your reality as your partner, loving, supportive? Do you feel the difference between these two realities as we describe them? Can you feel it inside you? What difference it would make if your reality was totally safe and loving and supportive? And that you had no judgments about yourself or your performance or whatever other people might say about you or anything like that. What if you were free of that? How would that be different from where you are now? Either so little or a lot. Now, we're not saying that you haven't made a lot of progress on this. You have. You've gone through various stages of exploring your relationship with your reality. It's time to love your reality and let your reality love you. It's time to love your body. Let your body love you. Let your body heal. Let your reality heal. Your relationship heal to your reality. We're going to end this segment tonight with a meditation for that. We're not going to do it now, because we have some things we want to work with you on between now and then that we can culminate there. But we're going to do some healing, healing your relationship with your world and with your body. But we want you to think about it first. Think about what goes on in your body. How much work the body has to do for you. For you to have motivation and passion, your endocrine system, your glands, your hormones must be right and balanced. For you to be able to conceptualize, imagine, and dream, and visualize your new paradigm, your nervous system, your brain has to function in balance. For you to be able to have the energy, the vitality in your cells to sustain action, your circulatory system, your heart has to pump blood and the blood has to take nutrition to the cells. The cells in themselves have to manufacture the ATP, the energy molecule for you. You have to have a metabolism and a catabolism that function. The metabolism, the breakdown of your food to nourish yourself in the digestive system, to integrate into you. And the catabolism, the building of bone, of muscle, building blocks of your body to sustain and repair. Your lymphatic system is there to help you detox, to let go, to release. Every system in the body has its function. The immune system, which is actually part of the lymphatic system, they're actually not that distinct. Otherwise, they wouldn't call the cells that do attack, you know, foreign invaders, lymphocytes. They're from the lymph. Your immune system and the lymph system are kind of polarizations of the same system, just like digestive and eliminative. The positive aspect of your lymph system is that it can release stuff, it can drain out stuff, it can take care of unwanted stuff. The positive of your immune system aspect is that if you love life, it enables the rest of your body to be willing to continue functioning for you. Some people are on the fence about life. If you have enough pain, you'll go there. If you have a major debility or disease, you'll go there. If you have enough fatigue, you'll go there. Into that place of, well, is it worth living or not? Am I willing to go through this day after day after day, year after year after year? Very often, if you can make a choice to love life and activate that choice, many times a lot of your pain, fatigue, weakness, and debility, even cancer, can go into remission. It can disappear. Your consciousness leads your body, but it is your partner, and you need to work with it in love. So think about that. What system in your body, like your chakras, what system is your weakest one, your weak link? What is it you're not willing to see or release or know about yourself? Maybe some of the slave driver gets stuck somewhere in one of your systems. All right. What we'd like to do now is we'd like to turn our attention and your attention to questions and answers. Certainly you have questions about what we're speaking about, but there may be other things of issue for you in your personal evolution. So Daniel has a microphone, and who would like to speak?
Hi, Galexis. This is Tanya.
Hello.
As you were talking about education here, Where do you see education going as we go through this light chaos, chaos of light?
Can you be a little more specific?
Curriculum.
All right, the curriculum
arts,
of education?
Yes, the all arts. Right.
Well,
and education itself in perhaps a greater awareness in or realization of self within
all right.
the truth.
All right. Well, you also acknowledge that there are two aspects to education. One is that you've got to learn information that helps you function in the world. That's what you send your kid to learn, how to do math, how to read, how to write, how to, you know, learn a little history, learn stuff, learn the culture, helps the child as it grows up to function in that particular culture. You get into high school, you learn adolescence culture stuff with all the extracurricular activities. You get into college. Now you've got to prepare yourself for your career along your chosen track, your major, so that you can function in the world. Once you get out of college, there's the postgraduate studies. For those who are educational junkies, you can continue and get advanced degrees in your area of focus. Now, the curricula of education all the way through is based on a particular perception about what is useful and what is necessary and what is vital in your culture. But it also has a certain limited opportunity for you to learn about things of interest to you and do things that are of interest to you. In other words, people who want to learn some kind, who get a PhD in archaeology, you know, it's not like archaeology is vital for the survival of the species, right? But it's your interest. You're fascinated with it. You collect fossils. You want to go on a dig so badly, even though it's boring as hell. You want to write papers on it. You want to talk about it every chance you get. So a lot of curriculum in the higher education level is oriented towards your interest and sustains an institution or sustains an interest in your culture about that particular topic. Now, many of you who are oriented towards spiritual development and personal growth and development have discovered that institutions are very slow to shift to that perspective that you have been at for years, and why don't they get it? Why don't they get it? Well, because, you know, for example, a lot of science. A lot of people get into science because they want to do things and go places interesting. But they want a justification for it. It's like a, you know, rocket science, right? It's almost like a whole bunch of little boys still want to put rockets out in the backyard. But they want to be paid for it and they want to do it big scale. So you have a lot of passion, a lot of opportunity for it. The curriculum itself is the form and content of education. But the context of education happens in everybody's life, everywhere they are, 24/7, regardless of whether they're going to a school or institution or not. And you have found, most likely, for example, let's make a comparison, psychology. People go to school to get their PhD in psychology so they can have a psychological practice. But it's so limiting because by the time you study all the, you know, Freud, you know, and everything, you come out with like, you have the book on the assessments of how you label all the disorders. Right? So you have to diagnose in that categorizing. They have numbers. Okay, this person is number 2768A because they have this symptom and this dysfunction. Then come along spiritual people and they say, wow, it's really about you. It's about unfolding your natural self. Education is evoking yourself. It's really where the word comes from. Its roots has to do with evoking what you know inside already. Evoking you. Spiritual people got that context and said, okay. And look at the proliferation of life coaches. Tremendous freedom. You know, some people are codifying it now into courses. In time, that will become an institution of limitation. Because as soon as you codify something, it doesn't grow anymore. So essentially, your whole educational system is a museum to your society's past. You have come as dreamers of the future to create new forms, new structures, new ideas. And they're not going to be found in universities. You're going to want to put these courses into universities that will free them, and they will eventually accept it. There's even a university that accepts astrology now, for example. You know, it's all things are possible. But as soon as you codify anything, it becomes an institution and entrenched. And then its major focus is its own self-sustaining life force. It's not interested in growing or changing. If you've noticed, educational system's not interested in changing. Now, there are individual teachers who are, but their hands are tied. They must fulfill their curriculum and certain orientations and attitudes, but they're bringing as much creativity to the process as they can. This we recommend. They will change. It always will be a little behind, unfortunately. As a general overview, it'll always be behind. Because the people who are out there in the avant-garde who are pushing the limit, first waivers like yourself, will always be dreaming and hoping that educational institutions can change. But institutions are not about change. They're about order. Right? Like, look at religion. You know, here's this incredible light being named Jesus, right? Comes and does magic and miracles and say, you too. You too can do these things. The kingdom of God is within you. Open to it. As soon as it got codified, thanks to Paul and others who never, ever were in the presence of this magical being, religion became a museum to Jesus. Like a way to remember, oh, how nice that must have been in those days when there was magic and miracles and angels. But, you know, people who see magic and miracles now and angels now, well, they're not okay. They can be evil. They can be threatening because they're threatening the order. Even though it's more consistent with what Christianity should be and what Jesus actually brought forth. You yourselves personally are on a path of divine realization that Jesus walked 2,000 years ago. Then it was rare. Now it's going to be, now it's available to all of you. It's a major change of age from Piscean to Aquarian age. What can you do about education? What you're doing right now. You talk to people, you tell people things, you share with them things, you turn them on to exciting new things. You dream, you imagine. This will bring along the institutions of education because it'll change the culture, and then the institutions who are preparing people for that culture will have to change. Does that answer your question at all? Or did we go way off into some other zone?
Your answers are fabulous. I agree totally. I think also the consensus and commerce has a lot to do with codifying things. And mm-hmm. I'm an art teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And we do crazy things and get
right.
out of the box.
You push the limits of the box, and yes. that's in a sense your mission.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And know that down the line, those children, or whoever it is, those students of yours, will get touched by the divine. Creativity is an expression of your divinity. And so anytime you encourage a student to imagine and to create and let them push the limits, you're preparing a new generation of
Thank
creative
you.
People, spiritual people. That's a very worthy mission. You may feel sometimes that it's your small potatoes. Don't believe that for a moment. Okay?
Thanks.
It's a ripple effect.
Thank you.
Every student you teach, you touch, you love, you heal, well, then send that energy out in a ripple to the whole world. Your whole world can change. Don't judge the educational system. Its major focus is self-perpetuation. But do what you can. And yes, commerce has created stultifying limitations to education to focus people on jobs, job security. That's part of the institutional aspect of it. But also realize that commerce is where the freshest and most creative ideas get put into the marketplace, published in books, released in seminars. You know, what college is going to say, come on, Galexis, come over and talk about busting the boxes, busting out of the box, thinking outside the linear matrix. Come on, Galexis, we'll give good credit for your courses to whoever takes it. They're never going to do that, you know. We're too far out for them. But you see, because of us and others who are outside the box as well, things change. Now, you may be impatient, very impatient with the growth rate of your culture, of your consensus. That's a judgment. Get off it. It's not there to grow and change for you. You're there to grow and change for it. You've come to love your world, to enlighten your world, to lift your world. And you do it by loving and enlightening and lifting yourself. And like a ripple effect, it goes out there into your world. Because if you were to judge institutions and say, no, change, damn it, you're going to be a rebel. You'll be resistant. You'll be judging. And education will be resistant. It will judge you. It will push back Every one of you is stubborn somewhere, aren't you? Somebody pushes on you and you don't like it, you're going to push back. Or you're going to just, well, that's it. You won't respond. Maybe you'll run away, but they won't get what they want from you. Stay out of institutions just because they can limit you. But if you are in an institution, do what this one has done. Touch everyone you can with love. You can be head of an accounting department at a corporation or even government. Touching everyone with love, you can enable that department to function at peak efficiency because people are not stressed. You can bring love anywhere. And everyone on an individual personal basis will respond, and this will have a ripple effect. Your reality will love you, will support you in return. Your consensus world doesn't require you to compromise for it as much as it seems like it demands. What it does require, though, is for you to love it and to coax it, to nurture it, and then it will happily come and love and coax and nurture you. All right, thank you for that question. All right, who's next? Where's Daniel?
Hi, Alexis. It's Stacy.
All right.
Hi. My father, who I do not have a good relationship with and I prefer to stay distant from and kind of worked hard to get to neutral with, is 85 and he has a heart condition and he's sort of sending out mixed messages to his friend. He calls and says, I need help, I need to go, I need money, I need this, I need that. And then to my sister and I, he says, oh, you know, don't interfere, you're bothering me, you're annoying me, help. And so it's really weird and hard. And I'm just wondering if you can tell me if there's a sense of how long he's going to live or if this... Sometimes
right.
I
you're
can't.
Thinking about his death in a positive sense here.
Well, I'm trying not to think. I mean,
how much longer am I going to have to put up with this bullshit?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, there's a little of that. Like, can you just die and put us out of our torture? But there's also, like, well, because I can't tell if he's really sick or not. One minute he seems really sick, and then it's like, oh, I decided not to take my medicine anymore because it's not organic. Kind of stuff. So he's just, and there's so much.
And what age is he now?
He's 85, and he has congenital heart where the sides aren't in sync. And he told me that the last time he talked to the doctor said, "Oh, if you got a pacemaker, that would fix that." But he doesn't want to get a pacemaker, and he wants to try something else that I forgot the name of that, where they take 7 weeks of. Doing stuff, I don't know. It's allopathic, but they don't do it that much because it's, I guess, so time-consuming. So, I mean, I want him to be well. I don't want him to suffer. I don't want to suffer. I don't want to go take care of him. You know, and he's, like, pulling. I feel like he's pulling at me all the time. And we've had this symbiotic guilt thing. And
So
part of me does want him to just, you know, be either really be well or just die quickly. You know, and I don't like
just
that
be
part.
Done with this sick relationship. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So what is it that you really are angry at him about? That he's not listening to you?
Yeah, he doesn't see me.
He doesn't see
he's
you.
He's never
you're
seen me.
You're kind of invisible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, last year I went and tried to have a heart-to-heart, you know, because I wouldn't talk to... It wasn't that I refused to talk to him, but I didn't see him for a few years, and I didn't call him, and I didn't want to interact with him. And so I thought, okay, his friend had called last year and said, this is now, it's time to say goodbye, if you want to say goodbye. So I went down, and I hadn't even been alone with him in the same room in I don't know
how
long.
How'd it go?
It went really well. I was just... there, and then at the very last day, right before I was about to leave for the airport, I said, this is why the incident that happened that my mother told me about that I kind of remember, and this is why I haven't wanted to, you know, be around you. And he did his normal thing of like, no, I didn't do anything, and mm-hmm. all I wanted was, I'm sorry, or even, I don't mm-hmm. remember doing that. I don't think I did anything wrong, but if it hurt you, I'm sorry. But I didn't get mm-hmm. any of that. I got like more reasons that were actually more upsetting about why it didn't matter, mm-hmm. whatever had happened.
Well, you had an agenda, didn't you?
I had an agenda, yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought I
See,
was...
See, the first few days, you were real.
Yeah. But what's not... What's real about not... About wanting... I'm sorry. I mean, to be actually heard. I thought
Yeah,
I was,
you want to be heard, but you yeah. know, he doesn't know how to hear you. He doesn't know how to respond because he's in shame. He's in shame about his past. He doesn't want to even acknowledge that it exists. He will deny. He will discount it. He will ignore it. He'll pretend. He'll rationalize. He's been doing this his whole life.
Right.
So for you to want him to break out of his box for you is really, in a sense, an attempt for you. You've been giving your power away to him for years and years and years, and now you finally want him to give you your power back. Your value back. Your love back. He doesn't know how to do that, dear one.
I guess I thought I was supposed to give it one more try, you know, like to be...
Well, you did, and it was really went well until you asked for that. Until you brought up, you knew this was the sticky wicket. You knew this was the issue.
But I feel like I shouldn't have to just suppress all of myself. And
No, we're not saying that at all. The thing is that if you have a parent or a loved one or even an adult child or whatever who is not willing to listen to you, who's not willing to love you, who denies, who discounts, who rationalizes, who runs away, who goes into all sorts of strange behaviors and reacts and takes everything personally, et cetera, the message from your loving reality to you is that you've given away too much of your love, your power, your freedom, and your trust to someone else. You've given too much of it away, and you need to take it back. And you don't take it back by talking to them in person, because you know your father, he cannot respond in realness. He's unwilling to look at the truth of himself because it's too terrifying for him. So he will not do that. And you know he will not do that. So what you do is that you must take care of this yourself. You must, as the light being who you are, you must listen to you. You must love you. You must take care of you. You must heal you. You must forgive you. You must forgive him. You must clear this negative, dysfunctional bond between you and your father. If you continuously seek him to give you the love or the recognition, you're still a child. You're not an adult.
No, I don't expect anything from him now. I just...
That's true.
I just...
And that's good. But you need to take care of you so that it no longer bugs you. So it no longer needles you. So it no longer hangs there unfinished. You need to finish your business with him. You see, just to make an illustrative example, the one who channels us had an ongoing battle with her mother. It went on from childhood. It started at age 5 with going to church. She didn't want to go to church. She said, people are not, they're not living according to Jesus at the church. I don't see why I should go there. It's boring. And they fought and fought and fought and fought and fought. Right? Finally, she came to peace with it all and was able just to love her mother unconditionally So, yeah, that's just the way your mother is. And just enjoy that part of her mother that she could enjoy. And she took care of all that guilt, all that rage, all that anger, all that torment, all that unhappiness, all that sense of futility and frustration. She took care of it herself in meditation until she got strong, until she could love, until she could feel free, until she could feel powerful, until she could feel safe even in her mother's presence. And the relationship healed tremendously. Her mother came a ways, really opened up and could open up to the love because there was no judgment there. But the mother never, ever gave up her point of view, never, ever accepted and acknowledged and admitted to all the stuff that she'd done. It wasn't a point to do anymore. But when this one, when this channel of ours got to that place of peace and love and could hold and hug her mother and love her unconditionally, only a few months later, mother died of a, was kind of hanging on. In fact, she was carrying her mother's stuff. And dear one, you're carrying some of your father's stuff. And you don't want to do that anymore. You understand?
I certainly don't, but I can't imagine loving him. I don't even want to hold his hand, let alone hug him.
Right. Well, right now, you're angry at him and you need to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
You need to acknowledge your spirit, your spunk, okay? How many minutes do we have?
Right. Technically two.
Technically two? 2 minutes. All right. Here's what we're going to do. We need to take a break. And so we want you during this break, and all of you during the break, think about where is there an unresolved relationship in your life? Is there anyone, particularly your parents, or some sibling, or some friend, or your mate, who kind of gives you that kind of resistance that you may feel guilty about for some reason, that may not listen? May not acknowledge. May never understand you. May never admit the crazy, stupid stuff they did to you. We suggest that all of you have this, had this experience with someone. It's time to resolve that and to heal it. So what we'd like to do is, as soon as we come back, we would like to do a clearing. A clearing for you, dear one, and for all of the rest of you. A healing of relationship. No matter what kind of relationship it is. All right? So we thank you for that question. And we will come back to that after the break. All right?
Okay.
All right. So we must take a break at this point. And how long? 15?
20.
20 minutes. All right. We'll return in 20 minutes. Farewell for now.